Oker Tov, good morning, everybody. It's good to be with you, enjoying seeing your faces and feeling our togetherness and community, even when we're not physically together. It's amazing how long some of us have been showing up here week after week, year after year. I really want a big thank you to those who made this happen. Really appreciative. Can you hear me? I will, Reggie, can you do a bell the next time it's appropriate? Because I'm having trouble with that today. So today on the Jewish calendar is a special day. We're in the period of the Omer, the counting of the days between the second night of Pesach and the holiday of Shavuot, which falls on Sunday evening, June 1st, this year. And the Omer is a period that's most notably viewed as a time of semi-mourning that commemorates tremendous loss of life in the first and early second centuries of the Common Era. Particularly because of a plague that killed thousands of students of Rabbi Akiva, a highly regarded teacher of the time. Tradition has it that the plague ended on the 33rd day of the Omer, which is today, which is why Lag BaOmer is celebrated as a joyful day and a reprieve from the mourning practices. There are other explanations for the meaning of Lag BaOmer, but we won't go into all those details. And if you're curious about the name, we may come back to this at the end, but the letters in Hebrew are also numbers. And so 33 is written as a Lamed and Gimel. The number Lamed is 30 and Gimel is 3. And when you put them together, if you put a vowel with it, you get Lag. So that's how we get Lag BaOmer, means the 33rd of the Omer. So today is a reprieve, a retreat from the solemnity of this period. It's a day when many people build bonfires, which can symbolize the light of God's regard for us. And it's also commemorates wise teachers of the Kabbalistic period who died, so it's said, on Lag BaOmer, and we celebrate their yahrzeit, particularly Shimon Bar Yochai, by lighting a bonfire to sort of bring his light back into the world. Yahrzeits in our tradition, they're the anniversary of a death, but they're also seen as a time of joy to celebrate who that person was and what they meant to us. So our parsha this week, our Torah portion, is Parshat Emor. It's Leviticus chapters 21 through 24. And for the most part, it deals with the regulations for the priesthood. And towards the latter sections, the text turns to the timing and reasons for Shabbat and the other biblical holidays. In her book, Torah Journeys, Rabbi Shefa Gold comments on Parshat Emor, introducing us to the paradox, what she calls the paradox of spiritual life. To lead us to that idea, she recalls a verse from Exodus, chapter 19, verse 6, where it says, "Va'atem tihiyu li mamlechet kohanim." God tells us, we will be a kingdom of Kohanim, of priests, a holy nation. So what is this about, that we're each to be a priest? What does that mean? I would say that it means in our day that we are, as the priests were in ancient times, the connectors between humanity and the divine, however we or you today understand that. So how is it that one can be a connector between humanity and divinity? So now we fast forward to this week's parsha. That was in Exodus, that we're all priests. And now it says in this parsha, where it's talking about the regulations of the priesthood, it teaches that all priests, along with all the people, the accoutrements, animal sacrifices, everything that they encounter must be without a mum, without a blemish. So priests have to be without a blemish. So we can translate it that as perfect in form and in nature, but we know the truth, the full picture of reality is that nothing and no one, even priests, are without blemish, without a mum, or some sort of imperfection. Things in nature have, limbs that fall, rocks that split, flowers that don't grow perfectly, and each of us has our share of mumim, I guess is the plural, of imperfections, whether they're physical imperfections or our character traits, etc. So how can we be priests if we're not perfect? So Rabbi Gold goes on to teach that today, the way we live in this contradiction of trying to be a conduit between humanity and divinity, but having this condition of imperfection, is to look into those flaws, look into those internal imperfections more deeply, as a means of discovering more about the overall perfection that comes to us and surrounds us. This is kind of confusing. It was for me, at least. So she writes, "To live with paradox, I must always be expanding my conception of reality, of the full picture, opening to wider views and glimpses of perfection. It's a continual process." So I understand this to mean that as we look at our imperfections, we go deeper to ask questions of why and how, and perhaps then being able to put that issue or matter in a different perspective and in a different way where it becomes part of our soul and part of who we are, and it expands the conception of the connection with all being, which is where the perfection may lie in the wholeness of all of life. So Rabbi Gold connects the last part of the parsha, which is about the holidays, as I mentioned, to this exploration of the self by pointing out that as the saying goes, Shabbat is a taste of the life to come, of a perfect life. And that Yom Kippur, for example, is a taste of pure of full forgiveness, which would lead to a perfect world if everything was to be forgiven and worked out. So the holidays enable us to dip into the world of perfection, even as the beginning of the parsha teaches us about the mums, the imperfections that we have. So, and finally, she writes, "Seeing the imperfections takes me deeper, helps me to see more of the perfection. This opens doorways to my own power as a priest." So there's some sense here, which we'll get more into in a minute, that looking more deeply at our flaws is a way of not ameliorating them, but somehow getting beyond being stuck on them or stuck from them. So Rabbi Jacob Staub, who is a meditator, a spiritual director, and for a long time, he's been a professor at the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College, focuses on, in our parsha, the theme of tum'ah, of ritual impurity. So it's often just translated tum'ah in contrast to tahor, purity and impurity. But he teaches that actually it's better translated as tum'ah as a state of unsuitability for serving one's purpose, so that one can be in a state, or something can be in a state where it's serves its purpose, but then something takes it out of that state. And for certain types of things, there are ways to go back into that state of being able to serve at your purpose. So that when a priest becomes tamei, or what we call unsuitable for serving one's purpose, they're unable to be this conduit between humanity and the divine flow for leading prayer, let's say, or for leading worship rituals, or all the other things that a priest does. And the things that can take a priest out of this suitability realm, so to speak, are things like contact with a corpse, where the priest, like others, has had this experience of death, which is otherworldly. It's not just hearing about a death or losing someone, but it's this physical contact with a body and with a corpse. And it's understood to put the priest in another state where he or she needs to do something to go back to a state of, I would say, sort of normal spirituality, where they can serve their purpose. So Rabbi Staub asks, what if we are priests today, what constitutes tum'ah, a state of spiritual unsuitability for us today? What stops us from connective prayer or connective ritual? So aside from seeing ourselves as serving others as a priest, just as a human being, aside from being a priest, what is it that clogs us up and makes us unable to be in this state of connection with the divine flow, however you understand that? Doesn't have to be an anthropomorphic God or a being, but with that sense of all of life and something bigger than our seen reality. So he is, I believe that Rabbi Staub is not referring to a God who hears prayer or having any particular attachment to liturgical language. So he offers, as an answer to his question, and the question again is, what stops us, or what constitutes a state of spiritual unsuitability for us today? As part of his answer, he offers a teaching by the Slonimer Rebbe, who lived in Israel in the second half of the last century, who taught, at every moment, the Blessed Holy One showers divine love down upon us, but a person doesn't receive that love unless she or he opens the heart to let the loving overflow in. All one must do, all, one must do is turn to the flow from the Holy One, acknowledging one's needs and being willing to accept the love and strength that is flowing their way. In this way, one's internal spiritual state is answered or addressed. So this is similar to, I think, what Rabbi Sheffa was saying about that we need to look at our internal state and to acknowledge that we have needs or that we need help. And in a longer essay that Rabbi Staub wrote, he talked about his first experience with meditation. And at first, you know, he was just monkey mind and et cetera. He was on a silent retreat. And what happened is that he got to a point where he realized he was sort of fooling himself, that he wasn't as okay as he'd been imagining himself to be. And he realized that he needed help. And he just started asking for help, and he didn't know who he was asking help from. He doesn't believe in the kind of God that, you know, would necessarily hear that kind of message, but that opening up of himself, and I would say humbling himself in some ways, just opened something up in him where he was able then to connect way beyond to something that felt like a flow of love and compassion towards him. How often have we felt that a surge of relief or calm that comes from simply naming, whether it's out loud or just inside, what's hanging over us, or the internal jumble state we are experiencing, that sometimes just being able to name that brings a change of state. The internal chaos, whether from angst, anger, depression, etc., is our tuma. It's what clogs us up so that we cannot receive the larger reality of beauty, human connection, and connection to the whole of life, to all of being. And the Kotzka Rebbe once asked, "Where is God?" and answered, "Wherever we let God in." So when we practice sitting, we have mind states that flood us with tuma, with this clogging of our ability to receive love and calm and beauty. And Rabbi says that the tuma prevents connection to healing, hope, and open-heartedness to the divine flow. So he suggests three mind states. He calls them illusion, an illusion that I'm whole, unbroken, in control. And the result is that I forget to ask for help. And then I find myself feeling alone and cut off. The second mind state is beating myself up over my mistakes. I forget to turn gently to my heart with compassion, thus also forgetting the compassionate one who is invariably less hard on me than I am on myself. And three, getting caught up in a runaround, keeping myself busy, anxious, that to the point that I lose sight of myself. I disconnect from my own soul. And if I'm disconnected from my own soul, then I'm most certainly disconnected from the cosmic soul. The unclogging, the release of this tuma, Staub suggests, comes from sitting. From sitting and submerging oneself in a mikveh, a bath of the spirit, in quiet, noticing my illusions, holding them compassionately, reconnecting with breath, the divine flow, holding in awareness the pureness of my own soul. Doing this, I allow the spiritual impurities to wash away, and I can better serve the source of all being. The illusions are causes of tuma, this spiritual clogging up, I'll call it, that Staub enumerates is known in, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Theravada Buddhism as tanha, clinging desire that causes suffering and attachment. Jay Michelson, a scholar of Jewish wisdom, points out that we can use contemplation as well as art, prayer, and even ecstasy to reach experiences of joy, of overpowering love that radiate out from the unity of being. How do we do this? How do we get above and beyond the distress, sadness, anger, and pain, and questioning by questioning and noting our stresses, befriending them, noticing distortions, discomforts within. He states, relating to your emotions this way, and I would say also your spiritual states, enables greater receiving or Kabbalah. He suggests that things that our minds push away, that we don't even notice with our minds or don't prioritize, are recorded in our bodies and are open to discovery, leading to release through calm noticing and opening to clarification. So he really focuses on somatic unclogging, that just being in your body and noticing how your body is holding itself or not holding itself is a way of cleaning out the tuma, the unsuitability for being able to connect or be a priest. Our teacher, for many of us at least, Sylvia Boorstein writes, we practice to arrive at that heart space of peace in which the well-being of others is as dear to us as our own, where chesed and compassion and empathic joy are spontaneous. So in closing, what these teachers and Parshat and more teach us is that the bigness of prior concerns and thoughts that may be our tuma, our source of unsuitability for being able to serve the world and serve God, that those things that seem so big can recede so that calm, empathy, freedom, and joy can grow and advance, helping each of us to be more fully in the service of God and to this world. So we have some time now for discussion.